Resume recording, and we can get started with the meeting today. Okay, great. Well, thanks everyone for joining the CCG meeting for today on October 27th. We are going to do a report out from IIW, and we have John Hopes, I'm not sure if I'm saying your last name correctly, to and his team to talk about AstroDAO and GeoDIDS. And then directly following this meeting, the Silicon Valley Innovation Program Wallet Competition is having an event where they're going to be announcing their three tier one wallet competition winners, and we'll have a conversation. And if you are interested in participating in that, I believe you can still register, and I'll put the link in the chat. Okay. So, let's see, IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work item must be a member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. If you need to sign up, I've put a link in the chat, the IRC, to do that. And you need to make sure that you have a W3C account to do that and agree to the community contributor license agreement. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at our CCG Minutes site. I'll put a link here. As we have been testing and trying to transition over to Jitsi, we have been using a variety of different systems and rewiring up our CCG, like all the magic wiring behind the scenes. And so we've, some of the meeting minutes for the last couple of weeks, or maybe month and a half, are not normally at that site. However, you can find all meeting minutes in more of a raw form at this link that I am placing here in the IRC. Once we have a solid transition to Jitsi or whatever we end up using, we will make sure that we have a cleanup of all the minutes in retrospect. If you need specific minutes, please get in touch with the chairs. Okay, we use IRC to cue speakers during the call and to take minutes. That is this IRC chat. I'm going to put a link for this in the Zoom chat link. If you are on Zoom, I will ask that you use the IRC to queue. And to add yourself to the queue, all you have to do is put queue the plus sign. And if you want to add what you want to talk about, you can just write a little note. If you want to remove yourself from the queue, you can put queue minus, and the chairs will pay attention to the queue, and we will call on you to speak. When we call on you to speak, try to keep your comment to one point or one comment and keep it brief so that we can allow time for everyone to be able to respond. And if you wanna make another comment, you can always add yourself to the queue. Okay, let's do scribe selection. Manu, thank you so much for kind of doing the scribing pre-early. Let's see, who do we have? Let's see. Christopher Allen is on the scribe list, but I do not think he's here today. I see him at IRC, but I think he said he was going to not be able to join today. Moses? No Moses. Drummond? No Drummond. Also, if anyone would like to volunteer, Sal, thank you for volunteering. Sal,
you're welcome.
What's your name?
Yes, Charles.
Charles, oh, okay. All right, great. Thanks, Sal. And you're familiar with scribing and everything, and you'll scribe in the IRC, right?
Yes.
Great. Okay, excellent. Thank you. Great. Okay, so now we're on to introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone new on the call that would like to introduce themselves?
I can take a second to introduce myself and the team who's going to be presenting in a few minutes. My name's John Hoops. I'm one of the co-founders of AstralDAO, where we're working on the Astral Protocol, which is a verifiable spatial data registry. And we have a couple of collaborators on, Jared Childers, Jason James, and Joelle Martins.
Great. Thank you so much, and welcome, John, and your team. Is there anyone else who would like to introduce themselves? Okay, I will take that as no. Let's look at reintroductions. I have Erica at the top of the reintroductions. Are you on today, Erica? No. Dan Burnett? Ori? Are you on, Ori? Would you like to reintroduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Ori Steele. I'm CTO and co-founder of an Austin, Texas company called Transmute. We focus on decentralized identifiers, verifiable credentials, and global supply chain traceability. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Ori. Anyone else want to do a reintroduction? I'm trying to see if there's anyone other. Drummond, Justin, Chris Winzicki, Ganesh. Manu, why don't you do a reintroduction? It's been a little while, but you've been doing so much work behind the scenes.
Sure. Thanks. Hi, my name's Manu Sporni. I'm the CEO of a company called Digital Bazaar, based in Blacksburg, Virginia. We have been a part of the community for almost a decade now, doing open standards work, very heavily involved in verifiable credentials, decentralized identifiers, encrypted data vaults, and a lot of the technologies that this community group works on. That's it.
Thanks, Manu, and much appreciated all of the work you're doing with Jitsi, even though I like to razz you about the Zoom stuff. Okay, great. So now we're going to move on to progress on action items. Let's see. All right, we've got three action items I'd like to look at today. Okay, let's start out with the Jitsi status. Wayne, do you want to give an update on that?
Yeah, Jitsi is healing. It was no one's fault, really, except for browser vendors changing things up and making it difficult for certain folks to listen to the audio and video. We believe that this Manu did some investigation on this and found that it was fixed upstream. We have to pull the changes down, but these changes do take time, which is why we're on Zoom. But I'd say that the work has been up and running, and we haven't had a crash in a while. So if the community wants to continue to trial Jitsi as our conferencing software, that is an option on the table. For the interim, we are using Zoom. And if you have any questions about that, there's a thread in the mailing list, or you can reach out to Cheers directly. Thanks for your patience and switching of meeting infrastructure on a dime.
Yeah, and I will say, I mentioned it in in the thread that kind of got buried. We had plans originally to use Jitsi for today's meeting, and I was literally ready to push the agenda button when I got word that there were still some issues that were going to affect people that we didn't want to affect. And so literally in the last hour before I was ready to go for Jitsi, we switched over to Zoom. And I think, there's a lot of different discussions on the list about it's very religious. It's very technology fundamentalism. And I definitely shared some of my thoughts, but also my personal thoughts don't really matter if the will of the community is different. So I have been supporting, all of the chairs have been supporting the move to Jitsi, and we have been working overtime and accommodating Jitsi. So, you know, I think that I would like to see the community acknowledge that and focus on that positive work as opposed to have negative threads when we are actually trying to solve the problem and dealing with an ongoing bug fixing issue. All right, let's talk about the next action item, which is the documentation of CCG. Wait, did I hear someone? Oh, yep, Manu's in the queue. Sorry, Manu.
Yeah, no problem. Just real quick on the Jitsi thing. The thing that we're waiting on, just to be very specific about it, we've upgraded the infrastructure, but the latest test showed that people behind very aggressive firewalls, like people in government buildings and people in corporate offices with like bank-grade security, can't join the calls. So while we believe it would impact only a very small number of people, we didn't want to open the bridge up and then have, let's say, you know, 10 to 20% of the people say that they couldn't hear audio and things like that. It would reduce people's trust in the Jitsi infrastructure. And we didn't want to tell people that they had to dial in. So that's why we're, you know, using Zoom for this call. And I'd suggest maybe the call after that. But we are actively working on it. It's not a difficult thing to fix. It just takes a little bit of time. I've got to find the time to set aside and figure out exactly what the flag or the bug is. But because we had the system working just fine before, like we had a couple of meetings where everything was operating as we expected, we expect to get back to that fairly quickly after we get this one last bug that affects a very small part of the community result. That's it.
Yeah, I guess I'll just say, you know, like the chairs are working overtime at your benefit for your service, and other people are working behind the scenes too. So maybe give us the benefit of the doubt instead of assuming the worst. Okay. Great. Let's move on to the next item, which is a really big success that we're excited to move forward with. This is issue number 134, the finished documenting the CCG process. Kim, would you like to speak to this?
Yeah, thanks, Heather. Let's see. Oh, thank you. You put the link in there. I would just, let's see, putting it in Zoom as well. So this is one of the items that Heather's referring to where your chairs are working furiously behind the scenes. This one specifically has been an effort over basically my whole time of involvement in CCG, I would say. And part of it is just to make sure that the work item process, how you propose it, how it gets shepherded through to its final status, like, you know, whether it's a working group note, a draft specification, et cetera. So a lot of it was, you know, learning what we're doing, documenting it. You were all involved in painful meetings where we discussed it. The final part of converting it to respec allowed us to kind of reduce complexity even further and get rid of, how do you say, kind of the remaining confusing parts of the process. So this one, I'm not proposing that we release as a draft or anything. I think this is something that makes sense to have as a ongoing community draft, which is a notion that we have formalized as of this work item process. So because I think that there's still opportunity to refine how we go about making the process more accessible for a broader range of work items. You know, I think the work item, I think part of this effort was investigating what the W3C actually requires for community groups and clarifying which of the things that we're doing just basically because it makes life easier for us now, or it's what we're used to, or tooling, et cetera, versus what's actually required. So we do make it clear that we're open to innovation on that front and just sort of working with, if you have any other ideas, work with the chairs and think of this document as a work in progress. And you know, that's it. So thanks everyone. And it's, as an ongoing community draft, it's open for issues, comments, PRs, anytime.
Great, thanks, Kim. I have a question to the community. Is it pretty straightforward, this document that's there, or would you like the chairs or for us to, in an upcoming meeting, walk through the document? Oh, Kim, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I actually wanted to comment on that because, so we talked at length about this in the past. I think partially one of the ideas is that we don't necessarily want to expose people to the inner workings of it. I think there are points in the process document where it says, okay, so here's what we do, here's what happens when you propose a work item behind the scenes. But in reality, what we want people to do is just go to this little GitHub issue template that prompts them to do everything, right? So the process doc sort of captures like the mechanics behind the scenes, but then also prompts people to just, if you're looking at this document to do an action, you should just go do the simple thing rather than having to understand this whole document. So, you know, I didn't make that part clear as well. Certainly if people are interested in a summary based on this sort of final revised version, like we can go through that, but yeah, that's all I had.
Great, yeah, thanks, Kim. I think that makes sense. What I think what might make more sense is maybe like a you know, how to submit a new work item or something like that versus go through this documentation, and maybe this is the reference documentation versus what the actual like practical process is. Kim, I just saw you jump on the queue. Did you want to just respond to that? I don't want to skip menu, but
yeah, thanks for doing that to keep the flow. Yeah, so thanks for pointing that out. I don't know if people are aware that we have been updating the basically the GitHub entry page. I'm going to put it in Zoom and in IRC. So we have been ensuring that things, you know, things like using IRC, propose a work item, creating CCG specs, et cetera. These should always be up to date. So if you want to propose a work item, just go there to get started. Any comments about that, just let us know, or any comments about other material that you'd like to have there. But we do want to try to get it as, you know, sort of sent so that you have a clear launch point to get started. Yeah, that's the last I had to say on that.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Kim. Manu, you have the floor.
Really loved the new document. Really appreciate the work that the chairs and everyone else put into it. It is clear, as far as I can tell, you know, based on seeing it, you know, having started many years ago. I do think, so, you know, if you didn't see Mike Prorok mention that he'd like a walkthrough, I do think that there is a kind of a, we need to help the new members in the community kind of understand how things work here. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we need to take up telecon time to do it, but maybe, you know, asking them to read through the document and then raise questions on the mailing list, or even having, you know, standard training sessions where we, you know, have an hour every 6 months or so where we say, hey, you know, if you're new to the community, come join us here. We'll tell you how, you know, the process works, queuing works, scribing works, and answer any, you know, newbie questions that you might have. feels like that would be a useful thing to kind of provide the community, understanding that it will require you know, people to volunteer and do work to make that happen. That's it.
Yeah, that is a really great suggestion, Manu. And as you were speaking about it, I kind of had this idea of like a CCG 101 series to acclimate new folks to the community, to our norms and processes, and how they can get involved. So that sounds really interesting. And Mike, I see that you are on the queue as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Manu for pointing that out, because from our side, obviously we've been tracking CCG for a number of years now, but there's a big difference between moving from a tracking mode into a an engagement mode. And so just making sure that we're kind of stepping into this the right way, that our team members are engaging the right way with the community and really being helpful, right? That's kind of the key goal, is like one of, kind of engage. And I'm just thinking back to, I did a lot of work with Gentoo in the early days, and those kinds of periodic onboard sessions, whether over IRC or, hey, let's just, make available a time, let me volunteer a 1 hour a month thing, right? And you can just kind of rotate through just folks as they're coming into the community, has worked well in the past. And that way, like when we're opening issues or contributing into something, or someone from our team is, that we're doing that in a way that's highly productive, as opposed to possibly, just causing an issue without meaning to, right? Like, we would do this normative over in this other group, but that might not be the case here. So,
got it. I love it. I'm adding an issue to our community right now. Great. That's actually something I really like. And as the chairs end up having more open space on our plates, I think that's a really great thing for us to pick up. Great. Anyone else on? Oh, Wayne, you're up.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a big plus one to that. Also great to run into fellow Gentoo users, or sorry that you had to go through that depending on your experiences. But having these sessions to onboard people to work on work items, not just read outputs, and giving people a platform to engage with maybe work item authors who might be very helpful in onboarding people and how to work on work items and what to look out for, how to keep people engaged. It's a skill set in itself to just be able to wrangle a group of volunteers working across different companies to move a spec forward. And I think that this is really one of those things that are passed down when you talk to people and just participate in it yourself. So I'm definitely planning to contribute to that issue. And I think I'll start a mailing list thread on that as well for anyone who has more ideas who can make it to this call.
Awesome. Great idea, Wayne. I think this is a really good. Okay, great. The speaker queue is empty. So the final issue I want to bring up, I suspect that we'll probably want to have more discussion, but I at least wanted to kick off this discussion, is item 136, which has to do with learning from the last co-chair election. This is really important because we are going to be having a chair vacancy next year. Kim has been a huge supporter and a giant in the chair. And when Wayne and I came in, she has been busy transferring her knowledge to us, and we've been kind of cleaning up the infrastructure to try to make it easy for a new chair, a new person to come in. And so I hope that we have another election. I hope that we have multiple people that are interested in her role, in the chair role. And so if you guys know me, I'm a futurist, I like to plan. One of the things we're talking about is succession planning in the chairs, so that we can have smooth handoffs and that we can have the knowledge be easily documented and transferred when we have new people come in. So one of the things that, Kim is going to be, Kim's still going to be here. She's still going to be part of the community. We're not losing her. We love her. We just want to give her a little bit of a break, I think. There were a variety of different comments based on the last election. I was not privy to a lot of the details of how things work because clearly I was running in it. But we wanted to, there's this issue that's open. And so we wanted to be able to have discussion and with plenty of time, clearly, you know, come up with an election process that everyone in the community, well, maybe not everyone, but we will mostly be comfortable with, to make sure that there is enough time for voting, to make sure there's clarity about when we announce winners, et cetera, stuff like that. So I think we just want to start having this conversation. We had reached out to Christopher Allen to join us today, but he was unable to join us. So I think that, you know, we're definitely going to be continuing to want to have this conversation. So let me see, is anyone on the queue? Does anyone want to have any comments on or thoughts on tracking this or addressing this issue? Okay, Manu, you're on.
Sorry, I tried to put Ben on the queue. He had a question in chat. I don't know if you want to ask.
Oh, Ben. Oh, I see Ben over here. Yeah, Ben, why don't you...
Are you talking about me?
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah, you can call me Bengo. Sometimes there's other Bens in the communities. But okay. Yeah, I just asked this question about the phone number on the CCG mailing list. I also kind of try to track the community, and then sometimes I see it on my calendar and I try to go dial in from that phone number, and it seems like phone number never works. So my question is only like, am I wrong for trying to rely on that phone number, or should the phone number maybe be different on the website?
Are you talking about like logging into Zoom?
Well, the W3C CCG mailing like website, I don't believe says anything about Zoom. So I think that's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's wrong.
Oh, are you, right now. Were you at the beginning of the meeting?
No.
Okay. The reason I ask is because, you know, we're in the process of switching over meetings processes, and we normally do have call-in numbers. And I believe there are Zoom call-in numbers. If you looked at the agenda.
I managed to find it. And the question, I kind of put that, like, I managed to find the mailing list. I'm on the call now. And that's why I didn't necessarily want to like take over the queue, but I didn't. Like, my question was, like, I've before sent people to this URL, and like, and not just me, I've reported like it's hard to get on the call because then like the phone numbers don't work. So I get that we're on Zoom, but I am going to have a hard time ever attending the call if the website doesn't have the information that gets me on the call.
Oh, right. Okay. So the, right. This is a result of us, change, like upgrading our meeting infrastructure, of which we are in the messy middle right now. And the goal is for us to switch over to Jitsi, which has call-in numbers. However, due to some technical issues, this meeting is being held on Zoom. And so the most recent information at this time is from the mailing list updates. I understand that is less than ideal for you and your team in the situations that you have encountered us. And we are kind of in an unusual time right now because we are switching from the old hard-coded audio IRC only version into a more accessible meeting structure, which our first choice is Jitsi, but the conversion, we are coming across various bugs and slowly fixing various bugs. And as depending on the state of our Jitsi system, we may make the executive decision to fall back to use Zoom prior to the meeting versus having a failure at the beginning of the meeting to use it. So that's what happened today. What I recommend for you know, the near future, probably through the end of the year, is get on the mailing list and just check out the, you know, the agendas. We send an agenda out for every meeting. I also personally send that link out on my own Twitter. And so, yeah, I know that's less than ideal, And normally we like to be a little bit more organized, and we normally are a bit more organized, but we're just kind of in this messy middle transition part right now.
I just have to ask a follow-up question.
Yeah.
When, if a meeting is like functioning on Jitsi, is that phone number, which it looks like it goes through Digital Bazaar's like switchboard, is that supposed to work when it's on Jitsi, or will it also not work when it's on Jitsi?
Wayne, Manu, do you want to answer that question?
Yeah, I can jump in. We will update the number. There is a new number that will get you into the Jitsi bridge. There's a US number now. We will add a EU number. And then anyone that wants a number for their country, please request it. We'll see if we can make it work. Adding phone numbers costs about $12 a year, which is like not that much. The goal here is to support phone-based dial-in for community members that need it, and that will it already is, like, it's working today, and it will be there when we transition to Jitsi.
Yep. But to put a pin in this, if I may, we hear you loud and clear that it's a little confusing on how to get here. We're really lucky that 26 people have gotten to us. Thank you for that. But we will do a better job. I'm going to open an issue to better communicate where the active meeting is.
Also, I will say, if you, part of the community, want to ensure a smoother, faster transition to Jitsi, volunteer. Kim, I think you're on the queue.
I guess I interpreted Bengo's question a different way. So I know one thing we haven't done in CCG is send out like standing invites. And so I know how I tend to interact with my calendar, or, you know, my life is like, I look at the calendar. If I don't see an invite, it doesn't exist to me. And then two, like, if there's not a link in there, then my workflow is all messed up. So I know that in task force, frequently what we do is send out meeting invites and, you know, keep it up to date with where we're meeting and everything. I don't know why we haven't done it in the CCG. We could do something where it's like, let people optionally add it to their calendar or something like that. That might be just an easier way to coordinate.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm same with you, Kim. I live and die by my calendar, and I just manually put in my own calendar entry. And occasionally some people will ask me to add them to it because I just have a standing one. So I guess actually that's something we can maybe add to the CCG 101 series if we want to explore having meeting invites. Perhaps we could also do something like that for the task forces as well.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think we're on to the main event now. We're a little bit behind time, but that's okay. Today we wanted to talk about IIW. So IIW is the Internet Identity Workshop. It happened last week. We wanted to give the community an opportunity to report out what they thought was interesting. What sessions did you like? Any speakers that were provocative? Stuff that was interesting? Put yourself on the queue if you want to make a comment. Okay, Wayne, you're up.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a moment to point out some of the exciting discussion that has happened across different standards development organizations and just interested groups, et cetera. Specifically, there seems to be an opportunity for convergence for a bunch of web standards, such as the emerging WebID, which I believe was proposed to Blink, the browser group, recently. There's extreme overlap with work in our community group, Chappie, the credential handler API. How do we get the browser to help facilitate with handling of credentials, right? WebID is within that area of extending the browser API towards these things. And then there's also follow-up discussion about the OpenID Connect PSIOP profile, the self-issued OpenID Connect provider, and the idea that a user can be their own IDP, you know, how does that relate to the web browser API extensions? You know, how does that relate to DIDs even in resolution thereof? So those discussions are happening. They're happening in the OpenID Connect working groups, AB, I think. They're happening in the identifiers and discovery group at DIFF. And they're ongoing, I believe, across several mailing lists. So it's an interesting convergence opportunity because if, you know, there's browser support for some of the work that we're doing, especially from the DID working group, you know, that could have pretty huge implications. So I just wanted to add that update.
Great. Thanks, Wayne. Adrian, you're on the queue.
So just you're up. To add to that, to Wayne's list, there was an interesting session, kind of like a mini face-to-face on authorization in the secure data stores context. A lot of the OGs on the OAuth2 side and the GNAP side and the ZCAPs, or the capabilities, not necessarily ZCAPs itself, side were there, and there was some progress made. Potentially a harmonization of how GNAP and ZCAPs work together, though, you know, I'm not sure that's going to work out, but it was progress.
Cool. Thanks, Adrian. Kim, you're up.
Yeah, so I had a session with Ori and Daryl O'Donnell on wallets. So I think that'll help inform some of our efforts. So it's sort of building on the wallet discussions that we've had here. I read through all the literature. I concluded that the way we define wallets is nothing but dumb, but hot and secure storage. Through this discussion, we found some other capabilities that we think of with wallets. So basically certain key signing functions and things like that. But I think it's helpful for getting conceptual clarity around wallets, agents, et cetera. And I hope to be able to sort of write up some of the results of that soon.
Great, thanks, Kim. Since we're kind of running behind time and there's no one on the queue, let's move to the main events. And so, John, are you ready to tell us about what you're doing?
Yes, hello, everyone. My name's John. I'm here representing AstralDAO. We have a few of the team on the call. We have Jared Childers, Joao Martins, and Jason James. I will go ahead and share my screen. And we'll get straight to it. There's a lot to cover. Okay.
And John, if you have a link to your slides, if you could drop them in, I'll drop them into the IRC.
Okay. I will share that now. And cool. Okay. Let's see if I can.
Thank you so much.
Actually, can I chat it into this IRC? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, whichever IRC, I'll make sure it gets into that. Yep, that's perfect.
Okay, great. So I'm here to talk today about the Astral protocol and a new DID method specification that we're designing to identify spatial data assets. So just really briefly, our background and how we got here. My name is John. I'm working with this team, these guys that I just mentioned. We're excited to be here. We're a bit intimidated by the brain power in the room because we are definitely not experts on DIDs or VCs or any of this. So this is partly to present our work and share some of our thinking and also hugely to validate some ideas we have and get feedback from you all. So I was at Rebooting the Web of Trust in Prague in 2019. So I met a few of you there, kind of dabbled on the edges. And was introduced here through Manu. One of the hats I wear is as technical director at London Blockchain Labs. And we worked on a big project where we were trying to put congestion zones on smart contracts so we could check where cars were or trucks and apply policies accordingly. And it created this really interesting problem where we needed to have some kind of data registry where we could represent the borders of the congestion zones. That kind of was building on a lot of thinking we'd been doing about how spatial data technologies could be joined into Web3. After that project, Hyperware, since then I joined the Kernel Fellowship, where I met Joao and Jared, and we've been working on the Astro Protocol since, especially through Apollo, and really looking at how to bring satellite imagery into Web3. So I'll get straight to it. Smart contracts don't know where you are. We've been talking a lot about the potential for location-based decentralized applications and spatial contracts, we're calling them, which are contracts that use some kind of spatial or location data as input parameters or some of the information that's used in the contract. Things that we think could be enabled, location is an intrinsic property of any individual or certainly any physical individual, right? And it's sort of one of these things that all of our governance systems, at least kind of traditional governance systems, are based around where you are. When you walk across a border, you're subject to different laws, different rules. As we're looking forward into this, hyper-connected world, we're thinking really hard about how we can bring some of those same functionalities into the world of Web3 and govern objects based on location using smart contracts in a privacy preserving way. We've been also talking with a lot of people in the finance industry. There's a lot of really exciting work going on in a field they're calling spatial finance, which is the application of geospatial data technologies to financial theory and financial practice. And one of the big ones here is using satellite imagery and analytics derived from satellite imagery to inform this financial decision-making process. We've kind of then linked that up with the world of DeFi and have been prototyping and doing some research on how we can use spatial data technologies in smart contracts. Big applications of finance, also insurance, supply chain, and so on. And then just kind of more generally, what kind of location-based decentralized applications could be enabled by this Web3 spatial world, like really robust land registries, augmented reality obviously has a very strong spatial component, routing and mapping services, fitness tracking. Fundamentally, we've concluded that location data technologies and spatial data technologies are such a fundamental part of why the internet is useful that the Web3 vision isn't complete if it excludes these technologies. So I want to talk a bit about some of the steps we've taken that have led us into this process of designing the GeoDid, which really kind of came at this from a, we've got a problem, let's try to create a solution. So the first was we did a project at ETH Paris in 2019, where we tried to write a library of geometric and topological functions in Solidity. And the idea here was we wanted to create this congestion zone system that would preserve the privacy of the sensors, but still check to see if they were in a particular location. So we started kind of putting the privacy aside and saying, well, let's just check to see if we can test to see if this point is inside of a polygon based on the EVM. And so we wrote this function. This is a pretty common, basically translating one of the spatial analytics libraries called TurfJS to check to see if the point was in the polygon, thinking, all right, if that's a car and this is a congestion zone, we could apply policies to that car based on whether or not they're inside or outside the zone. It's possible, obviously, to run it on the EVM, but the gas costs balloon as the complexity of this polygon increases, because you basically loop through the vertices of the shape to check to see when it intersects with this ray cast out from the point. So we thought, okay, cool, that's great, we can do it, but it's not really feasible to run it, at least not on Ethereum mainnet. So let's kind of think of some other ways. Parallel, we created at ETH London earlier last year, a project called GeoLocker, which is a verifiable spatial data registry for self-sovereign users. So the idea here was We wanted to create this congestion zone system. And in order to do that, we had to have, obviously, the device owners that had IoT embedded trucks and vehicles, but you also had to have zone administrators that could register the borders of their congestion zones and administer the policies that are applied within those zones, but they would be self-sovereign. And so this is kind of the original idea of creating these this system where self-sovereign users could register and upload the vector geometries in the form of GeoJSON to a distributed backend. In this case, we were using Threebox. We also did another implementation on Arweave. In this one, we tried to get something which is an interesting kind of challenge around this, which is this sort of idea of hierarchical sovereignty, right? If I register a zone and it's the Greater London Authority, I probably need to get approval from the UK government that the zone boundaries are accurate and that the policies are compliant with the local regulations, whatever. So we had a really simple version of the hierarchical approval involved. This is all running on chain on Ethereum. What we didn't have, and what something we talked about, was how do we detect and handle these sort of kind of spatial collisions or topological overlaps where you have two zones on the same level of the hierarchy. If one registers and they've got an overlapping boundary, we want to be able to detect that border dispute and deal with that, arbitrate that. The hierarchical approval question, and we also didn't get privacy built into this. This was at ETH London in the weekend. The question that we've got around hierarchical approval, and we haven't really looked too much at this, but this would be seem to be the point where verifiable credentials would come in, where the authority that has sovereignty over that jurisdiction would then sort of issue some kind of credential that says, yes, this is a valid zone or policy zone. So moving on, these kind of were fused then to a piece of work I did at London Blockchain Labs with Jason James and a couple of others, which is called HyperAware, which is a spatial governance protocol for connected devices. So here we essentially created this system of smart contracts and distributed storage where device owners register their devices, which are actually IoTeX Pebble trackers, meaning they have secure enclaves installed on the device. And then we also had the jurisdiction registry where they could register the policy zones that represent the boundaries of the zones where we want to apply these congestion charges. And then we had I've got a slide that talks about the users, so I'll talk about it in a second, but self-sovereign users, privacy for device owners. We talked about how we could use privacy, build in privacy for the zone administrators, where we could check to see if a point was inside a polygon without ever revealing the position of the point or the boundaries of the polygon. And the way that we do that is, so we've got these device owners that register a data on IoTeX that then submits coordinates as it travels around the world. Zone owners would register this vector geometry polygon on Ethereum and Arweave. And then we had a validator node, which was also had actually an Intel SGX enclave, where it would test if the point was in that polygon. This obviously solves those gas problems while actually doing a pretty good job, obviously, on the security. I know there's some questions about the security of secure enclaves, but then within that validator, a transaction was created and signed with the private key inside the enclave that was then submitted to the smart contract that transferred the congestion charge over to the zone administrator. And this is where we thought we could build privacy and for the zone owners as well as the device owners, because if the zone owner encrypted the data with that validator's public key, then it would never actually reveal the details of that, but it could still be tested inside the enclave. We also did a little bit of work looking at if and how peer-wise DIDs could be useful to preserve privacy, but we've been not giving a huge amount of effort to doing a lot of prototyping on the privacy side just yet. So this was sort of the alpha implementation of the GeoDID, where we register a decentralized identifier, and in the DID document we have a reference to the GeoJSON that has the outline of the vector geometries. So this is the zone registry interface where someone like the Greater London Authority could come on, or Transport for London could come on and load in their congestion zone and register these zones. We represent each individual geometry in the services array, the services endpoints. So the idea there is with a single DID, the administrator or DID controller could own multiple and manage multiple geometries. So one authority could have multiple vector geometries in the same geodid. And here specifically, this is kind of all the metadata associated with that DID. The service endpoint was a URL pointing to the Arweave JSON object that had the GeoJSON. That was the GeoJSON object. This is very much a draft. We've been talking about maybe making this service object actually a valid GeoJSON object. Exactly how that works, we're not sure, but this is the kind of initial implementation. And then more recently, we built a sustainability-linked bond, which is a decentralized spatial finance application. And for this, we had to solve a similar problem, but with a bit of some different requirements. So with this, we had a bond issuance that was over the demo was it was a 10-year bond, and the idea here is that every year the structure of the bond is updated based on input a value that was derived from analysis of satellite imagery. So the satellite imagery that we used in this case was an image of London that represented the nitrous oxide levels in the city, and every year an oracle fetched this data and did this analytics process and submitted that value to the smart contract, which updated the amount of money that the borrower had to pay and essentially aligned their financial incentive with their environmental incentive. If air quality improved, they would pay less. If it got worse, they would pay more. The idea here is it's the government of London and they want to be incentivized to improve air quality. So this, we forked a contract that someone had written and adapted it so it was linked to these sustainability metrics that was running on Ethereum. So this is just, again, a really broad overview of the approaches that we took and the problems that we're trying to solve that we're kind of realizing calls for these geographic decentralized identifiers. So this is a decentralized identifier to identify spatial data assets. We are designing them to be able to identify raster data assets like satellite imagery, LiDAR data, digital elevation models. That can be raw data captured from a sensor orbiting the Earth, or it could be derived data that's created from some analytics process applied to the raw data. We're modeling or designing raster geographic DIDs to be compliant with what's called the spatiotemporal asset catalog specification, which is a spec that's developed by a bunch of people in the satellite imagery world. It's a standardized way to search for and access raster data sets. And the idea there was we wanted to be able to build on a lot of the tools that they have. It's really amazing for cataloging and kind of collating spatial temporal assets. And then we're also working on another kind of class of DIDs, of geodids, which are vector geodids. That's points, lines, polygons, geometry collections. The alpha implementation will be with GeoJSON because that's kind of the web native way of representing vector spatial data. But it's not absolutely necessary that it be GeoJSON. You could potentially represent a shape file or store a shape file in the service endpoints array. So we're doing this early research and kind of alpha prototyping and so forth. And so as I said a little earlier, the spatial data and metadata is referenced in the services array. So one geodid can control multiple spatial data assets. And we're starting to investigate the potential of using NFTs to represent ownership and give the option to transfer control or potentially incorporate some kind of like refungibility or composable tokens to represent ownership of these DIDs or the rights to access the DIDs and the DID data. Our status now, we've got this geodid method specification. It's very much in progress. We're far from experts here, so we're really excited to get feedback. We have drafted a reference implementation of the code we need to register and maintain these raster geographic decentralized identifiers. We have a prototype UI for registering and administering these. So we've got the NPM modules and then the UI that kind of creates this client-side decentralized application for it. And then a prototype UI as well for registering vector geodids with GeoLocker. That was the one I kind of showed you a little bit earlier.
Hey, Jeff, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Normally we could go over a little bit, but unfortunately today we have a meeting starting exactly at the top of the hour again. So maybe if you could just kind of, have some wrap-up words, and I'm really sorry, I don't think we're going to get to the queue today, but maybe we can have you come back another week and finish up.
Or sure.
If that's okay.
Well, no problem at all. Yeah, this is really pretty much the last slide. We're looking for feedback, who this would be useful for. Anyone you see that's working on similar problems, really would love critiques, especially based on everyone's insight into DIDs and VCs. We are looking for collaborators to help finish the specification, develop the code, work on some Web3 native geospatial capabilities like cloud-optimized geotiffs on IPFS, thinking about adoption. Obviously, government would be a big key to adoption. So any thoughts and ideas there? We're on Twitter at AstralDAO. We have a Gitcoin grant up, and you can email us. Really would love to connect and follow on with any ideas or feedback.
Thank you so much, John. And again, I'm so sorry that we have to wrap up, but we have a very great community. And also I might recommend, like, if you want to just pop an email onto the list, I'm sure we can have a great great discussion there. And we'll talk back channel, see if we can have you back for another discussion. Everyone, thanks so much for attending the CCG meeting today. We are going to close the Zoom. The IRC is going to start up it's going to switch over to the wallet, the DHS SVIP wallet meeting, and we'll see you over there. Thank you. I'm looking for your full name. Thank you so much for Charles. Yes, thank you. Charles, thank you so much for scribing today and volunteering. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you. We are not hosting the CCG next week due to Election Day, so we'll see you in 2 weeks.